Wednesday, February 1st, 2017, you are listening to the Daily Dose Sports Podcast, and I am your host, Clint Daly, sports writer from Denver, Colorado. You know, we talk sports once a week. We talk sports every single Wednesday. And, you know, we really don't do the typical sports talk. We don't get caught up in that first take, first fake argument and nonsense. You know, we try to bring some common sense. Hopefully, we can actually make you smile a little bit at work, wherever it is that you listen to the podcast. And, you know, sometimes we might even mix in a little vintage look back at some sports history. Stick around. You will see what I am talking about. And stick around because everybody's welcome. You don't have to be a huge sports fan to hang here at the Daily Dose. Everyone here is welcome. If you would like to recommend the podcast, and we appreciate that, we're not out there doing a big PR campaign trying to get the Daily Dose heard by everyone. So if you can tell a friend, a coworker, maybe a family member, hey, you know what? I got this podcast I listen to. You got to check it out. We would appreciate that. Let them know. They can download the podcast. They can subscribe to the podcast. Number of different places. All the regular places. iTunes, Stitcher, Podcast Republic, Google Play. Head over to Audio Boom. Go to blogtalkradio.com. They've got every single episode over there. Or you can go over to our website, dailydosesports.wordpress.com. And while you are there, you will see articles go up every single week. What went up this week? We had a poll go up this week. We had a Super Bowl poll go up this week that you might want to check out. It's a little bit surprising because we do some very scientific kind of polls over at the Daily Dose. You might want to head over and check out the poll that came out this week about what people are hoping for from Super Bowl 51. A little bit surprising what people were hoping for. Also, be sure to stop by our podcast network page, rogueintel.com. Of course, Rogue Intel is a family of podcasts. And if you head over there, there's a number of different other podcasts that are over there. A lot of different interests. You might find music, just entertainment, some travel. You can find a number of different things over at Rogue Intel, a number of different podcasts that you will get addicted to and check out each and every single week. Got a question? Got a comment? Maybe you have some feedback for the show. Maybe you have a suggestion for the show. I got a couple of suggestions this last week. I got a couple of suggestions for top fives this last week. One of them, I'll be honest, I could do a whole show on one of them. I'm going to hold on to that. I'm going to just grab that because we have to do a whole show on one of your suggestions. I'll be sure to give you some credit when we do that list. I've got a smart audience here at the Daily Dose, and that makes it a whole lot easier. So if you would like to offer a suggestion, we would appreciate it. Send it over. You can hit us on email, dailydosesports@gmail.com. Or you can find us on Twitter or Facebook. Both of those handles are at Daily Dose Sports. That is D-A-L-Y, Daily Dose Sports. Today on the show, look, we realize that right now, this week, you are getting inundated with Super Bowl previews. I'll be honest, I'm sick of Super Bowl previews already. I really am. I won't even turn on sports talk. I won't turn on sports shows this week. I truly won't. I completely understand it. If that's how you're feeling this week, I completely get it. Forget the sports talk all week, let alone that 19-hour Super Bowl pregame show they do the day of the Super Bowl. Oh, it's brutal. Does anyone sit and watch that entire thing? I can't imagine it. And I'm as big of a sports fan as there is. I can't imagine sitting down and just be like, well, it's 6 a.m. I might as well turn on the pregame. Game starts in a short 10, 12 hours. I might as well start getting this going. Look, I really don't need to see like the greatest groin pulls in Super Bowl history and all that other nonsense that they're going to be showing. But you're going to have to trust me on this. Just take my word for this. We will give you a Super Bowl preview like no other. We will give you a Super Bowl preview that no one else is going to give you. Plus, we've got some NBA happenings. We've got some things going on in the NBA I want to talk about. We've got some college basketball things going on. World of college basketball is starting to get interesting. I know we still have like a month before we care about college basketball. I actually sat and watched a few college basketball games over the weekend. College basketball is starting to get a little bit interesting to me now. And you've got to make sure that you stick around for our Daily Dose Top 5. I've told you before, the Daily Dose Top 5 has a mind of its own. It just kind of takes its own course and goes a different place. You never know where it's going to go. Might be topical, might not be topical at all. You might learn something, you might get dumber, but you have to be sure that you stick around for the Daily Dose Top 5. Are you ready for the Super Bowl? Are you ready for the Super Bowl? It feels like a holiday, doesn't it? Now, in the United States, and I know we have listeners overseas, but in the United States, Super Bowl Sunday is statistically the biggest party day of the year. Here's the problem for me, though. I won't lie. I'm not a big Super Bowl fan. I know that sounds insane. I know that sounds ludicrous, but I'm not a huge Super Bowl fan. And there's a few reasons for it. One, it means that football is officially over. How long was this past Sunday? No games, no nothing, yet just they had the Pro Bowl. And the Pro Bowl ended up being, I'm told, entertaining, because I'm telling you right now, I didn't watch it. I don't have any idea what happened in the Pro Bowl. I think the AFC won. I don't know. I don't care. I'm not watching that nonsense. But how rough was Sunday? So that's one of the reasons that when the Super Bowl hits, I'm like, oh man, football's over. I'm bummed. Like, I'm legitimately bummed out. Football is over. We don't have the holidays anymore. That's gone. Now football's over. That's gone. It's kind of a depressing time of year, isn't it? Now we get into those kind of dog days of winter. Rough for a little while. Yeah, that kind of bums me out. Secondly, the Super Bowl, like I said, it's the biggest party day in the United States. So for the Super Bowl, you get people watching the game that don't care 1 ounce about the game. In fact, they don't watch football at all. What they do is they just run in for the commercials or they watch the halftime performance and then they just stand in front of the TV when you're actually trying to watch the game. It doesn't make it that enjoyable of an experience, at least not for me. It's a little bit rough because I'm in tune to the game. Like, I'm trying to pay attention to the game. I can't even see around you. They're just in there talking. I wonder what Gaga's going to wear. Who do you think she's going to have as a guest? Get out of here. You're just in the way. I don't need that. So here is a key, little Daily Dose help for you, because that's what we are. We're in the business of helping people. Here is a key to enjoying yourself. Maybe you're at a Super Bowl party, and they're kind of ruining your Super Bowl experience. You know what you need? You need a drinking game to make things more enjoyable. Yes, you need a drinking game. Now, you know the Daily Dose had you covered. We aren't saying you even have to drink alcohol. Maybe you're underage. Maybe you're a recovering alcoholic. Maybe you're a functional alcoholic. Whatever it is, you can still take a sip of the drink of your choice. Maybe you have a few friends who are in on it, and you can say, hey, we're here. There's some people here that could care less about the game. We'll play our drinking game. And as we play our drinking game, maybe no one else in the room knows, but we kind of look at each other and we know we're just trying to survive the Super Bowl party. Let's be honest. Nothing worse than getting stuck at a Super Bowl party where no one whatsoever cares about the football game. So here we bring you our Daily Dose Super Bowl party drinking game. Are you ready? All right. Here's the first rule. Anytime that Tom Brady's legacy is mentioned, you've got to take a drink. Seems fair enough. Might be a little bit rough, but that seems fair enough. Anytime that it is mentioned that the Atlanta Falcons have never won a Super Bowl, take a drink. All right. We're okay so far. Anytime someone says the words Deflategate or Spygate, you're going to need to finish your drink. I don't think it's going to come up that much. I think they'll kind of hint around it. Well, you know the troubles that the New England Patriots have had. I don't think they'll actually say those words. But if they do, finish that drink. Anytime, and this is a little bit obscure. Anytime anyone mentions the phrase Dirty Birds, finish that drink. Okay? Anytime someone mentions, well, you know, Roger Goodell is going to have to hand that trophy to Belichick and Brady. Yeah, make sure you take a drink anytime they say that. All right, now you've had a few now. You've had a couple of drinks by now. Anytime Falcons wide receiver Julio Jones is called uncoverable, take a drink. Okay? You okay so far? Yeah, you might think you are. We're going to take it up a notch. We're going to bump this up a little bit. All right, you ready? If the team you are cheering for wins the coin toss, take a sip. If the other team wins, whatever team that might be, if they win the coin toss, take a gulp. Take a gulp of that drink. If the referee or like a former player, like, I don't know, Joe Namath or someone, botches the flip of the coin, you need to finish that drink. Now, that's happened before. If they botch it, or like someone says, we're taking tails, and they say, oh, you called heads? Whatever it might be. Maybe they flip the coin up and they can't find it. We've seen all these things. Flip the coin, it doesn't actually flip. Any of that kind of nonsense, finish that drink. All right. If anyone refers to Boston or New England as Titletown, or if anyone calls Atlanta Hotlanta. Now, this isn't just the announcers. I'm talking anyone at your Super Bowl party. If they call Boston Titletown, or they call Atlanta Hotlanta, you need to finish that drink and you need to smash that cup you were drinking out of right into your ears so you don't have to hear that kind of crap anymore. All right. Anytime on the TV broadcast, they show some diva-like reactions from those, you know, supermodel princesses like Giselle or the other one. What's the other one's name? Oh, yeah, Tom Brady. Tom Brady. If that happens, take an elegant sip with your pinky out.
If you want to be fancy, hold your pinky up like this. The higher you hold it, the fancier you are.
How's that?
Higher.
Like that?
Now that's fancy.
When they flash to that reaction shot, again, elegant sip, pinky way up. If Lady Gaga mentions Donald Trump during her halftime show, and I've got a feeling she will, finish that drink and you need to yell out at your party, "Well, that was racist!" No matter what was said. Makes no difference what she said. I don't even care what she said. She brings up the name, just yell. If Aaron Hernandez murders someone during the game, take a sip. And the reason I'm saying take a sip instead of, let's be honest, it could happen a few times, is what I'm saying. I don't want you to die of alcohol poisoning, so just a sip. Okay, we're coming down the stretch. If the Atlanta Falcons win the Super Bowl, take a big drink. If the New England Patriots win the Super Bowl, finish your drink. If the New England Patriots raise the Lombardi Trophy and the football looks maybe a little deflated, well, you might need to call Uber. You might be drunk. Or, I don't know, maybe you've been hanging out with Patriots owner Robert Kraft.
For a number of reasons, all of you in the stadium understand how big this win was. But we have to go to Houston and win one.
Either way, there is your Daily Dose drinking game. Let's see if you can finish your Super Bowl party and still be standing up at the end of it. Okay, did you realize this? You might not realize this about college basketball. Did you realize that College Hoops is actually trying to drum up some business? And I've got to give them a little bit of credit because I've told you. I've kind of been on them. They need to drum up some business. They need to see if they can get us more interested in college basketball prior to March Madness. It's the first time we start watching it. We don't even pay attention to college basketball until that bracket comes out. As soon as Selection Sunday hits, oh man, we're all experts, aren't we? But they're trying to drum up a little bit of business before that, and I give them a little bit of credit. Beginning on Saturday, February 11th, ESPN is going to host a March Madness bracket preview show every week up until the actual selection show, where the selection committee will announce who they currently have at each of the top four seeds in each of the four regions. So they'll basically announce the top 16 seeds in the bracket. I'll be honest, at this point, I'm happy with anything that drums up some business. I do think it would be better, though. I think it would be better if we got to see inside the conference room. Can't they take us in there? I want to see how they come to these decisions of who gets in and who doesn't make it. What causes a number one seed to drop to a number two? What causes a number three to jump up and grab that number one seed? Is it the strength of schedule, like they say? Or is it honestly that conference tournament, like they always deny? Because we always get to those conference tournaments, and all of a sudden somebody jumps up and, oh no, it had nothing to do with the conference tournament, it's just strength of schedule. Really? I'm not buying that. Here is my only problem. Here's my only concern, I guess. I don't think that they'll be honest, just like in football. Because in football, we value conference championships above all else. Well, yeah, unless it's a big name, blue blood program, and then we just do whatever we want. That's a little bit of a concern that I do have. But I do think maybe it starts to generate a little interest. Maybe we start kind of doing like we do in college football, where we're kind of looking at, why are they number one? Oh, why is Duke down to number four? Why is Villanova, they dropped down to a number two? That kind of thing, I think, is a little bit interesting, just to get some conversation started about college basketball. Can we please start to care about college hoops before the tournament gets here? We did see a number of college basketball upsets last week. You know, it was the first time since 1979 that the number one team, the number two, and the number four all lost in the same week. Pretty amazing. Marquette started off. Marquette beat number one Villanova. West Virginia knocked off number two Kansas. Keep an eye on that West Virginia team. Just throwing that out there. Tennessee somehow slipped past number four Kentucky at home. Syracuse beat Florida State, who was ranked number six. Miami actually kind of handled number nine North Carolina. Colorado beat number 10, Oregon. Georgetown beat number 11, Butler. And Georgia Tech is surprising some people throughout the country. No one was expecting anything out of Georgia Tech. Georgia Tech beat number 14, Notre Dame, at the buzzer. Now, what do these upsets mean? Do they mean anything? Maybe they don't mean anything. I'll give you three things that they mean. They tell us a few things. They do give us a little bit of a hint of some things. First off, there are some good teams this year. There are no truly great teams this year. There just isn't. I think it's a matter of depth. I think it's a matter of returning experience. But there are no great teams this year. There are some good teams. Those teams at the top, and I'll guarantee there'll be a couple that sneak in, but those teams, they're very, very good. They're not great. And they're all beatable. I'll give you something else that it tells us. In conference play, these teams know each other so well, that anyone can beat anyone on a given night in conference play. And as we get further and further into the conference play, that's what we see. We experience this even coaching at the high school level. You know each other. You know each other's personnel. A lot of times, you literally know each other's personnel personally. Like you say, hey, I mean, you're talking to each other before the game. You know each other. You know their set plays when they call them. Hey, they're running gold. Here's what it is. I mean, you're calling it out. Your players are calling out their sets as they call them out in preparation to try to react to them. You know them that well. When you know an opponent that well, it makes it really, really tough to get a win. It does. Every single night is just a battle. Every single night is just tough to get a win, especially on the road, which a number of these, the higher seeds were going on the road. It's tough to beat those teams on the road. Lastly, what this tells us, with all these upsets already, March Madness is going to be phenomenal. As usual, March Madness is going to be very, very good. And we saw already, Villanova bounced right back, won a tough game on Sunday. Kansas came back and beat Kentucky in the very next game on Saturday. These teams are young, they're very, very talented, and March Madness is going to be, again, the one major sports event that always lives up to the hype. Let's talk a little bit of NBA. You know, the New York Knicks are shopping Carmelo Anthony. But remember, like we talked about last week, he has to approve any trade that would be brought up. So if he doesn't approve it, they can't do it. He has that clause in his contract. So last week, the New York Knicks actually asked Cleveland if they would be interested in possibly working a trade and trading Kevin Love for Carmelo. And right now, here on the Daily Dose, we actually have an exclusive clip of Cavaliers general manager David Griffin responding to the proposed trade. Do we have that right here? You know, the other team that Carmelo has said he would approve is the Los Angeles Clippers. Here's the problem for the Clippers. The Clippers have said they will not deal Chris Paul, DeAndre Jordan, or Blake Griffin. They won't do it. So that means, who are the players left? Who do they have left to trade? Everybody starts throwing out these trades. Well, you know what you could do? You could trade. Hey, both sides want something in the deal. We're not going to give you anything. And if that's the case, that means the Clippers would have to trade J.J. Redick, who is your only consistent outside threat. Jamal Crawford, your best bench player, and has been now for a few years, and probably Austin Rivers. Now look, I'm just a simple guy from Colorado. But if head coach Doc Rivers even considers trading his own son, I'm telling you right now, he's going to have to answer to Austin's mother. And I don't care who you are. I don't care what you do for a living. I don't care how powerful you are. Miserable wife, you're going to have a miserable life. I don't think New York is going to get anywhere with Carmelo. I will say that he ends up staying. I don't think they're going to be able to move him. Because none of these teams are going to give the Knicks anything of value. Why would you? You know they're kind of stuck. Like, you know they're just kind of scrapping and trying to get anything they can. Can we please move this guy? All he does is shoot. Why would you give them anything for him? And any team that takes him on, even say Cleveland, who there were apparently talks with, why would Cleveland want Carmelo Anthony? Just to suck up some more shots? He doesn't play defense. He doesn't rebound. He can't play point guard. He can't spell Kyrie Irving. So what exactly does that do for Cleveland? I would imagine Carmelo Anthony, as much as the Knicks may try, I think Carmelo Anthony is going to be sticking around for a little while. Speaking of the Cavaliers, and yes, I hate to do this. I really do. I feel bad. I hate bringing up LeBron James being a diva every single week. It seems like I'm doing this every single week. I feel bad. The problem is LeBron James keeps doing things like this. It kind of takes it out of my hands when he keeps doing things like this. LeBron James is now saying he wants the Cavaliers to spend some more money and go get a backup point guard. That sounds all well and good. But of course, the problem is that LeBron James is getting a max deal. And let's not forget that he has basically handpicked this roster himself. Remember? He was pressuring ownership. Hey, you better give Tristan Thompson this huge deal. They signed Tristan Thompson to a five-year deal worth $82 million. Let's be real clear. LeBron James has put this roster together for the most part. Now he's mad? Now he's mad at what? That they listened to him? They should be the ones that are mad. And remember, just a few weeks ago, when they traded for Kyle Korver, and everyone is acting like, well, now this team is just going to steamroll everyone. Now they have just that legit three-point shooter. He's such a high percentage shooter. Now they're just going to crush everyone. Well, yeah, except that Kyle Korver can't play defense. He's a really good shooter. I'll give him that. But he can't guard anyone. And the problem for Cleveland is still the same. They don't have a backup point guard. I'll give you that. But LeBron James is playing way too many minutes. Because you can't take LeBron and Kyrie Irving off the floor at the same time. They can't do it. When they do it, suddenly they just see this huge drop in production. Suddenly, even bad teams are staying with them. Even bad teams are beating them. LeBron James is playing way too many minutes this year. Is there anyone out there they could go get to play backup point guard? They're going to have to give up something for it, though. They don't have any draft picks. You might say, well, they just need to trade a draft pick. You could go get, you know, even someone like Jameer Nelson from Denver. You could go get him with what? You don't have anything to trade. You don't have any draft picks. That's not going to happen. Don't wear LeBron James out for the postseason. That is my only advice to the Cleveland Cavaliers. You wear him out for the postseason, all of this Cleveland Cavaliers stuff goes away really, really quickly. The East will catch them. Forget the West. The East will catch them. Dwayne Wade made some headlines last week when he called out the younger players for the Chicago Bulls. Of course, Wade was fined. He didn't start on Friday when the Bulls lost to the Heat. And then he came in off the bench. Him and Jimmy Butler both had kind of made some comments. Then they were punished, so they both sat out. And then the Bulls didn't even play hard on Friday night against the Heat. Wade basically blasted everyone when Chicago lost to Atlanta last Thursday. And he basically said how people just don't care enough. There's been a lot of talk about this. If you're listening to sports talk, if you're listening to sports radio, you've probably heard some of this. But there are a couple things that most of the sports media is missing on this story. First off, where did Dwayne Wade come from? What's his background? He came from Miami, where things are run under the iron fist of Pat Riley. Now he comes to Chicago, where head coach Fred Hoiberg is running like a hugs for made layups kind of system. Do you see the difference there? This isn't necessarily Dwayne Wade calling out the young players. I know that's what everyone is saying. Oh, he's calling out the young players. Now the young players are calling him out. You need to practice more, Dwayne. You don't practice more. Do you really think that Dwayne Wade thinks guys like Jerian Grant and like Nikola Mirotic and Paul Zipser should really be producing more than they are? I don't buy that. I don't buy that for a second. I think Dwayne Wade is calling out his coach because he's saying, you don't make us do anything. You don't work us hard at all. I think he's calling out the coach and a little bit calling out management. And you guys aren't holding this coach's feet to the fire and making sure that we're improving. Because he's used to Pat Riley. He's used to what was going on in Miami. You come in here, you work hard, you practice hard when you come to the arena, and we demand that you play extremely hard. That's not what's going on in Chicago. The Bulls are just kind of going through the motions. It's fun. We're just going to have fun. I know, Hoiberg's going to get fired. I don't have any question about that. But let's be real honest. Could there be something else to what Dwayne Wade's saying? Could Dwayne Wade be trying to maybe, I don't know, get under the skin of management? Because I think management looks at it and I think they know. He's calling out the head coach. He's calling out the front office. Any chance that maybe Dwayne Wade is just really hoping that the front office will get fed up and maybe try to trade him? Maybe try to ship him out. Maybe try to get rid of him because they're just sick of him. He's divisive. He's talking down to the younger players. He doesn't believe in our head coach. Dwayne Wade could be trying to get himself out of there. He might be trying to get himself dealt. Now, where in the world could Dwayne Wade go? Maybe play a little bit of a lesser role. Maybe just come in and, I don't know, play some backup point guard. I don't know. Any chance that Dwayne Wade is trying to get himself sent to Cleveland? I'm just throwing it out there. We know that him and LeBron are boys. We know that they're tight like that. We know that they go on the banana boat together. And LeBron is always, always trying to play with his friends. I don't know what that comes back to. I don't know what that's about. But LeBron has always been about trying to play with his friends. Any chance that Dwayne Wade is hoping he could get himself sent to Cleveland to help out a team that, let's be honest, in the postseason could desperately use that help. I don't know what they would trade to get him. I don't know what they would be willing to trade to get him. Like I said, they don't have a whole lot of assets that they could trade away. Just makes me wonder if that's what could be happening. Hey, our Daily Dose Super Bowl 51 preview is coming up. And we have a Super Bowl-flavored Daily Dose Top 5 that you want to make sure that you stick around for. We will be right back.
Yeah, every time I go to get new body armor or some more drones, I always go to Amazon. But I don't just go to any Amazon. I go to rogueintel.com/Amazon. So this way I can help out my favorite podcast with every purchase I make. And I know I purchase a lot. Get to the chopper now!
Anime, comics, video games, and pop culture. These are but mere playthings for the manliest beings in all of podcasting history, the powerful Nerdcast. Hosted by the gurus of geekdom, Corey and Christian, join them each week to discuss all things nerd culture, everything from Star Wars to Dragon Ball Z, and everything in between. Find the powerful Nerdcast on the Rogue Intel Podcast Network at rogueintel.com.
Hi guys, it's Kim from Round Trip, the travel podcast where we share our stories and travel experiences. You can listen to Round Trip at rogueintel.com.
Let's shift our attention over to the NFL. Not sure if you know this, but the Oakland Raiders moved to Las Vegas. Might be in some serious trouble. We'll see if they can figure this out. But apparently, they hit another financial roadblock. They had billionaire casino mogul Sheldon Adelson involved in the situation, and he had committed $650 million to get the Raiders to come to Vegas. Unfortunately, looks like Adelson might be out. Adelson is the CEO of the Las Vegas Sands Corporation, and he says that he was shut out of talks that led to a lease document being presented to the Clark County Stadium Authority. And as a result, he says, that's it. I'm done. I don't want anything more to do with this. You guys go find your own money. If you're going to lock me out of meetings, if you're not going to have me be involved in this process when I am the one paying all the money, I'm out. I'm done. So now the Raiders are going to have to scramble. Either they're going to have to come up with the money themselves, which is what they've been trying to avoid doing in Oakland, or they're going to have to try to find someone else. I would imagine there's some other bidders in Vegas that would love to bring an NFL franchise, but it won't be the one that had been there to begin with. Adelson is now out. We'll see what the Raiders do next. The San Francisco 49ers surprised a number of people around the NFL by hiring John Lynch to be their new general manager. We talked a little bit last week about who the 49ers would be bringing on as their general manager. Of course, Lynch had a phenomenal playing career as a safety with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers and the Denver Broncos. He was a very, very intelligent player, and he has spent the past few years as a color commentator on Fox. He doesn't have experience actually doing this kind of work, but he's a very smart guy. Here's the thing, I guess, that is a little bit interesting to me. The San Francisco 49ers interviewed 8 different candidates for this job. Not one of them was Lynch. The Niners then brought back 2 final candidates to interview for the job. Neither one of those was John Lynch. Then they hire John Lynch. Hey, John Lynch is not an NFL scout. And I think that is actually going to anger some people around the league, some people in those NFL scouting jobs that say, how does he get this job? He's getting this job just because of his name. He's not getting this job because he's actually done the job. He's not getting this job because he has merit to get this job. He's getting this job because he played football, and so they say, oh, we're going to hire a guy that played football. That might be true. The problem for some of these former players is that a lot of owners think back to guys like Matt Millen, who was an absolute horrible failure in Detroit. And when you hire a guy like that, you're running that risk of maybe he's going to be another Matt Millen. Maybe he's going to be another guy that he was a former player, but as far as player personnel, he didn't have a clue what he was doing. And I think that kind of hurts chances of guys like Lynch getting jobs like this. Now, I do think, like I said, I think John Lynch is a smart guy. I think he is at least capable of doing this job. Plus, let's be real honest, John Lynch apparently wanted this job, which is more than we can say for most people. Because I don't know of that many people who are really dying to get this job. I know they had 8 candidates. I don't have any idea who those candidates were. I just know that they interviewed 8 candidates. If he wants the job, yeah, I guess you might as well take him. Here's the problem. I don't have that much faith in San Francisco 49ers CEO Jed York. I don't know if he's that bright when it comes to football. I don't know that he really gets what being that CEO of a big NFL franchise like that is all about. Doesn't seem like he gets it quite yet. He's only 37 years old. Now, for those of you who don't know, he is the nephew of former San Francisco owner Eddie DeBartolo. He is Eddie's ex-wife's husband's son, something like that. It's some twisted tree there. I don't know exactly how it works out. But I just don't think he knows exactly what he's doing entirely when it comes to running the San Francisco 49ers. Obviously, we can look back at what he's done so far. Hasn't been real good. But you want more proof? You want more proof that Jed York doesn't know exactly what he's doing when he's running this team? Here's some proof. This past week, when asked about why he hired John Lynch, York said, "We're okay with people doubting us because I am confident in Kyle and John." Wait, Kyle who? Who are you talking about? Kyle Shanahan? You have confidence in Kyle and John, the Atlanta Falcons offensive coordinator that you aren't allowed to hire until after the Super Bowl is over? Is that the Kyle you're referring to? Because you can't be that confident in that Kyle yet. I want to wait and see if the NFL is going to discipline this moron for admitting that he has already hired Kyle Shanahan. He isn't allowed to hire him yet. You're not allowed to. Hey, I like John Lynch. I like Kyle Shanahan. The fact that Jed York likes them is kind of making me question both of them now, though, isn't it? Maybe I don't like you. Maybe I'm not quite as sure as I was because you're not that bright. Doesn't seem like he quite knows what he's doing. All right, let's get to our Super Bowl 51 preview. Of course, we've got the Atlanta Falcons, the New England Patriots. Yes, the Atlanta Falcons. I said the Atlanta Falcons. You kind of forget the Atlanta Falcons are in this game, don't you? All the talk is about the Patriots. All the talk is about Brady and Belichick and Belichick and Brady and Brady and Brady and Belichick and Brady. You kind of forget there is another team involved in this whole process, isn't there? Look, there's going to be a ton of Super Bowl analysis over the next few days. It's the biggest game of the year. And honestly, at this time of year, there's not a whole lot else going on when the game is being played. The problem is that everyone does a Super Bowl preview. Like we said, you're getting hammered with Super Bowl previews right now, whether you want them or not. They are going to ask celebrities. They are going to be asking everyone, well, who do you think is going to win the Super Bowl? Why do you think this team is going to win the Super Bowl? We have a million Super Bowl previews. Look, it's not that hard to do a Super Bowl preview. I can do a Super Bowl preview right now. Real, real easy. The Atlanta Falcons have a ton of weapons. Matt Ryan is playing very, very well, and he has a lot of people that he can get the ball to. Julio Jones is bigger and stronger and faster than most every defensive back that he is going to face. Devontae Freeman is a powerful running back. He runs very, very hard. He can catch the ball out of the backfield. And that's not it. Matt Ryan also has Tevin Coleman, Mohamed Sanu, Taylor Gabriel, and all of these guys can make big plays on any given play. Atlanta's offense is no joke. But they are facing pretty solid defense, top scoring defense. And Bill Belichick is as good as anyone ever at taking away what you like to do. Now, you hear that. And I heard Brian Billick was talking earlier on the NFL Network this week, kind of talk about that and say, oh yeah, of course Bill Belichick takes away what you like to do. The rest of us moron coaches, we take away the backup players. We take away the decoy players. That's not exactly what we're saying. I understand what Billick is saying, but there are a couple different ways you can attack defensively when you look at different games. Bill Belichick can look to attack the Falcons defensively and say, here's what we're going to do. We're going to take away Julio Jones. We're going to double team him. We're going to make someone else beat us. He can also look at it and say, no, we're going to play Julio Jones straight up. We're going to take away those other guys. We're going to make sure we've got good, solid coverage on those other guys. And if Julio Jones is good enough to beat us by himself, then so be it. What Bill Belichick does, and that's why I kind of disagree with what Brian Billick said, what Bill Belichick does, he takes away your best player. He takes away what you like to do the most. Look, you can throw it to Tevin Coleman. You can run it with Devontae Freeman. You can do some other things. Whatever you do, we're going to take away Julio Jones. I understand what Brian Billick is saying. I get it. The way we defended players in basketball sometimes came back to that. We would say, okay, they've got a player that averages 40 points a game. We can either double him and really do work on him and say, okay, he's not going to beat us, or we can make sure to defend the other four guys on the floor and say, okay, you got to beat us by yourself. Hope you can score 80. You're going to have to beat us by yourself. And that's where I kind of differ with what Brian Billick is saying. Now, the Falcons' defense is not that powerful. I fully expect the New England Patriots to look to run the ball down their throat. I think they will get a heavy, heavy dose of Deion Lewis and LeGarrette Blount. And Tom Brady will look to attack the Atlanta defense. Now, the Atlanta defense, they play some cover three. They like that cover three. And they will play man-to-man. They've been better with the man-to-man later down the season. They've actually been better with that because they've got young guys that really don't understand how to play that zone as well. But if you see them in that cover three on Sunday, basically, I'm not trying to get too technical, three deep safeties in the back of the field, those long drag routes over the middle that guys like Julian Edelman and Chris Hogan like to run, they're going to be wide open. And Tom Brady will find them. the thing that Atlanta has done defensively, they have gotten to the passer. Their pass rush has been a little bit dangerous. They have sacked opposing quarterbacks 42 times this year. So when I look at this game, when I look at it and I say, okay, who's going to win this? Can the Falcons get to Tom Brady? If you're going to play zone and you're just going to rush three or four guys, you're going to have a long day. Can Matt Ryan be big in a big moment? And let's be honest, we don't really know. He's been better this year. He looked great this year in the playoffs. But we don't know what he's going to do on the biggest stage. We don't know what any of these guys are going to do on the biggest stage. See, we can roll out a Super Bowl preview just as well as anyone. We could totally do that. But that's not how we're going to do. That, by the way, was not our Daily Dose Super Bowl preview. Because if you just heard that and you said, really? That sounds a lot like every other Super Bowl preview. No. That's not what we do. See, we do it a little bit differently. That is not how we roll. Now, let's get down to the Daily Dose Super Bowl 51 preview, and let's break the game down for real this time. Because the breakdown that we do will tell us who is going to win the game. Are you ready? Let's take a look. Take a look. You'll see what I'm talking about. Who is the best player in history for either team? It's pretty easy for New England, isn't it? I mean, it's Tom Brady. It's not even close. I don't know if we're going to put anyone else on that list, but Tom Brady gets it hands down. That or the camera guy, I don't know. For Atlanta, who's the best player in Atlanta Falcons history? I don't know. Deion Sanders for a couple years? I don't have any idea. See, the Patriots win that battle. 7-0 New England to get started. Who has the best fans? Who has the best fans between these two teams? You know, the Patriots have a ton of bandwagon fans. They have as many bandwagon fans as probably any current sports franchise out there. Think about it. Right now, ton of fans. Cleveland Cavaliers. You ain't never met a Cleveland Cavalier fan in your life until the last year or two. Duke basketball. Know all kinds of those. Chicago Blackhawks hockey. Yep, got those. Alabama football. And the New England Patriots. A lot of bandwagon fans for the Patriots. I get that the hardcore Boston people are big Patriots fans. They've been supporting since back in the 60s. I understand that. There's also a lot of Johnny-come-latelys that have never even been to the Boston area. Oh, I just love Tom Brady. I love the dimple in his chin. Yeah, I'm a huge Patriots fan. Get out of here. Now, here's the problem. The city of Atlanta is a notoriously horrible sports town. Atlanta couldn't sell out Fulton County Stadium when the Braves were going to the World Series every single year in the 90s. Sorry, some bandwagon fans over, like, not really any fans in general. Patriots go up 10-0. Patriots are up 10-0 early. All right, which city has the best music? Which city has the best music? Boston's got Aerosmith. Boston has New Edition. That's pretty good stuff, isn't it? That's not bad. Atlanta has Outkast. They've got T.I. They've got the Black Crowes. I don't know, they got Seven Dust. They've got Usher. Ciara, Indie RE. So here is the turning point for me. Boston has New Kids on the Block. Looks like Atlanta's on the board, people. Okay, Patriots are up 10-7. 10-7 early. Best hometown restaurants. Atlanta has the Waffle House. Have you been to a Waffle House lately? It's always interesting, isn't it? Not quite sure what you're going to see in a Waffle House. Boston has Boston Market. I think we could all agree nobody wins there, right? Like, nobody. Like, Waffle House, Boston Market, I'm not going to either one of those places. I know. Atlanta has Chick-fil-A. I'm not a fan, but I understand some people like it. Boston has Baskin-Robbins. Patriots kind of squeak that out. Patriots up 17-7. All right. Starting to get interesting now. Patriots got a 10-point lead. Best uniforms. Which team has the best uniforms between these two? I realize the Patriots are supposed to be like red, white, and blue and all American and all patriotic. I got to be honest. I hate that bland, ugly blue. Be royal blue. Be baby blue. I would like that better. That monochromatic, navy-ish, ugly-ish blue, it needs to go away. Think about it. The Rams have it. The Seahawks have it. The Texans have it. The Patriots have it. Honestly, the Patriots should go back to those 70s and 80s red jerseys with the white pants. Those were slick. Those actually looked pretty good. Falcons aren't great. Atlanta doesn't have great uniforms. I'd rather see them go back to their black jerseys. And honestly, I've never seen a Falcon with the wings the size of like a Boeing 747 like they are on the side of the Falcon's helmet. Why are those wings so big? I've never seen a bird with wings that big. It's close. I'll give it to the Falcons because the Patriots have the flying Elvis on the side of their helmet. That's not good either. Patriots up 17-14. Falcons got back in it. Falcons are back in a little bit. Celebrity fans. Which team has the better celebrity fans? The Patriots have Ryder Bill Simmons. They got Mark Wahlberg. They got Matt Damon. Pretty solid group. Falcons are not quite as good. Atlanta has Usher. Atlanta has Ludacris. Atlanta has Selena Gomez. I guess there's something to be said for that. This doesn't seem like it's very close. It seems like the Patriots are going to win. Oh, wait. Who else? Oh, yeah. The Patriots also have Ben Affleck. Look like the Falcons take the lead. Atlanta is up 21-17. These are getting interesting. Super Bowl's getting interesting, folks. Best hometown TV show. Come on. Seriously. Designing Women versus Cheers. Get out of here. Patriots take the lead back 24-21. Who has the weirder owner? Who's got the weirder owner? Falcons owner Arthur Blank is a really weird guy. Have you seen him dancing around after they won the championship? He's a weird dude. Doesn't he kind of remind you of Walt Disney? I don't know why, and I can't explain this, but he looks like the kind of guy that probably has ghosts in his house. I don't know why that is. I have no idea why that is. He just kind of looks like that kind of guy. Bob Kraft, last week, of course, we played earlier, was absolutely loaded when the Patriots beat the Steelers.
For a number of reasons.
But does that make him weird? Not necessarily. There are a lot of people that were drinking when the Patriots beat the Steelers. So that doesn't make him weird. Of course, accepting the NFL punishment of $1 million plus two lost draft picks for Deflategate without even appealing it, and then later complaining about what a raw deal you got, yeah, that kind of makes you weird. I'm going to give this one to Atlanta. Atlanta takes the lead back 28-24. Folks, we've got a shootout. We've got a shootout in Super Bowl 51. Worst former player. Worst former player. Of course, the Falcons have had some truly awful players. The Falcons have a history of mediocrity. Jeff George, Andre Bruce, Michael Booker, they've had some just very, very average teams and very, very average players. A lot of draft busts have come from Atlanta. But they never had anyone go on a murder rampage like A.A.Ron Hernandez.
You done messed up, A.A.Ron!
I think the Patriots win on worst former player by far. Patriots take the lead back 31-28. What about popular food in each city? Patriots got the clam chowder. They've got the lobster and the clam chowder. Falcons have, I've been to Atlanta. Atlanta has some really good food. I went down to Atlanta and had like the best fried chicken I have ever had in my life. They have very, very good southern barbecue. Hey, folks, we've got a tie game. And it's late in the game. We've got a tie game 31-31. Okay, here is the question. Here's what it all comes down to. Super Bowl 51 all comes down to this. Who is the biggest cheater? Falcons got busted in 2015 for using fake crowd noise. They were actually fined $350,000. They lost their 2016 fifth round draft pick. But let's be honest, nobody does cheating like the Patriots do cheating. And I know. Patriots fans say they didn't do anything. It's all kind of shady. Yeah, the NFL is just picking on them. I understand. But keep in mind that Spygate and Deflategate are just the things that we know about. There's a whole lot of things out there that we don't know about. I'm going to say New England Patriots 34, the Atlanta Falcons 31. And I will say it right now. We haven't been wrong in the history of the Daily Dose. I would be thrilled to be wrong right now. I'm going Patriots 34-31. Atlanta, please prove me wrong. Please prove me wrong. Matt Ryan, please step up. Defensive pass rush, please get to Tom Brady. I would be thrilled to be wrong. Okay, you know you have some shopping to do. I hate to point this out. Valentine's Day just 2 weeks away. Hey, don't get cute trying to buy your Valentine something they won't even like. Head over to lootcrate.com/dailydose. Loot Crate delivers pop culture crates filled with exclusive items and apparel from your favorite TV shows, movies, and video games. You can go order a crate, you can go get a subscription of crates, or you can just order individual items. You can find crates featuring Harry Potter's Wizarding World, Firefly, Halo, Marvel Comics, Power Rangers, Lego Dimensions, and there is a ton more over there. The best part about ordering is when you place your order, put Daily Dose in the coupon box, you'll get 10% off your order. Loot Crate kicks us a little money. We will forward that money to the Billy Betts Lacrosse Fund, which will help some kids get involved in sports that can't afford to do so. You get what you need for Valentine's Day without your Valentine looking at you like, what did you get me this nonsense for? They'll actually like it. Plus, we help some kids get involved in sports. That's always a good thing. As we do every single week, we have got to get to our Daily Dose Top 5. You know, you think of the Super Bowl, and you think of certain names, don't you? You think of the Bart Starrs, the Joe Namaths, the Lynn Swans, the Joe Montanas. But we have seen a number of no-name guys step up in the biggest game and make a surprising name for themselves. You never know who it's going to be. Let's take a look at the top five surprise Super Bowl performances. Are we ready? Number five on our list. Of course, Green Bay Packers quarterback Brett Favre was getting most all of the attention prior to Super Bowl 31. You know, he had won the 1996 NFL Most Valuable Player after Brett threw for nearly 4,000 yards and 39 touchdowns. And honestly, not a whole lot was expected from the New England Patriots at that time. This wasn't these New England Patriots. This was kind of the loser New England Patriots. Yeah, they had a solid running attack led by Curtis Martin. Drew Bledsoe, I guess, had thrown for 27 touchdowns, but most people thought, because remember, the NFC had been winning Super Bowl after Super Bowl after Super Bowl, that this would be a blowout by the Green Bay Packers. But the Patriots actually limited Green Bay's offense to just over 300 total yards, and they even led early in the game. They closed it to a close game late. But kickoff returner Desmond Howard had a huge day. He returned four kickoffs for 154 yards, including a 99-yard touchdown that sealed the win. Hey, Desmond Howard, Super Bowl 31. Don't forget about the special teams on Sunday. They could come into play. Number four on our list, Tampa Bay Buccaneers had the top defense. Kind of see that this year. The Oakland Raiders had the top offense. Kind of see that this year. And the two teams squared off in Super Bowl 37 in, yeah, Raiders versus Buccaneers, kind of the Pirate Bowl. A lot of pregame attention had been going to the bigger name players, of course. Warren Sapp, Derek Brooks, John Lynch for Tampa Bay. And over on the Oakland side, they had Rich Gannon, they had Tim Brown, and yes, they had Jerry Rice. And a ton had been made about Tampa Bay coach John Gruden, who, remember, had coached the Oakland Raiders from 1998 to 2001 and then went to Tampa. Oakland was actually a four-point favorite in that game. But the Tampa Bay defense dominated the game. They forced five Rich Gannon interceptions. And two of the interceptions were made by a little-known safety named Dexter Jackson. Yes, Dexter Jackson would be named the game's MVP. Super Bowl 37 and Dexter Jackson. We weren't expecting much from Dexter Jackson, were we? Didn't see that one coming. Number three on our list. Bart Starr in the Green Bay Packers running game was getting most of the attention prior to the very first Super Bowl ever played. Don't forget, and we kind of do forget this, Bart Starr had already won four championships when the league decided to play the NFL versus AFL championship and call it the Super Bowl. Wide receiver Max McGee didn't even expect to play. He had caught just four passes all year, and he had actually gone out partying all night the night before the Green Bay Packers were to face the Kansas City Chiefs in Super Bowl I. But the starting wide receiver, Boyd Dowler, left with a separated shoulder on just the second drive of the game, and in went McGee. He caught seven passes for 138 yards, scored two touchdowns. Not bad for a guy who is probably still drunk, right? That's number three on our list. Getting down to the final two. Top five Super Bowl surprise performances. Number two on our list, the Dallas Cowboys were rolling in 1995. They had won Super Bowls 27 and 28 and they had just missed Super Bowl 29 by losing to the San Francisco 49ers. But in 1995, they had gone 12-4. They had everything going. Troy Aikman threw for 3,300 yards. Emmitt Smith had run for nearly 2,000 yards. And Deion Sanders had been signed and was leading a much improved Dallas Cowboys defense. They were cruising through the playoffs. They crushed the Philadelphia Eagles. They handled the Green Bay Packers. And now they would be facing a Pittsburgh Steelers team that honestly was probably overachieving even getting to the Super Bowl. There was no way Pittsburgh was going to hang with the mighty Cowboys. Except that late in the game, they kind of were hanging. They were down just 20-17, and they were driving with about 4 minutes left for a possible go-ahead score, maybe a tying score, when Steelers quarterback Neil O'Donnell threw the ball directly to Cowboys cornerback Larry Brown. Of course, the Cowboys would punch in another score, and the final score of 27-17 really wasn't that indicative of how close the game had been. It was Brown's second interception of the game, and it was Larry Brown, not Deion Sanders, not Charles Haley, not Chad Hennings, and of course not Troy Aikman or Emmitt Smith or Michael Irvin or any of those guys. Larry Brown was named the MVP of Super Bowl 30. So who could be number one on our list? So who is our most surprising Super Bowl performance? We go back to 1987, and I'm telling you right now, this one still hurts. The Denver Broncos had lost to the New York Giants the previous season, and they were hoping to get it right this time. They had gotten back to the Super Bowl. The Washington Redskins had been a really weird story. You know, they benched starting quarterback Jay Schrader in favor of Doug Williams. Starting running back George Rogers had been battling nagging injuries all season. In fact, after the season, he would end up retiring due to those injuries. And so the Washington running game had actually been really, really inconsistent. The Broncos had league MVP John Elway. They were a 3.5 favorite. And it looked like those 3.5 points wouldn't be enough because early, the Broncos jumped on top of the Redskins. It was 10-0. And it looked like, hey, Broncos got back. They're rolling. They're going to get this done. Denver's going to finally win it all. And then Washington backup running back Timmy Smith went off. Timmy Smith ran for 204 yards. Washington had the greatest quarter in Super Bowl history. The Washington offense scored 35 points in the second quarter alone. Washington won the game 42-10. And while it would be great to say that Timmy Smith went on to a great career following the game, he actually didn't. It wasn't anything like that. He just had one spectacular game. He came back the next year, fattened out of shape. They said he had a drug problem. He wanted a bigger contract. He would end up getting cut in 1989. He tried comebacks with the Chargers and the Cowboys, but neither one of them really worked, and he was released by both. By 1990, Timmy Smith was completely out of football. But for one incredible Super Bowl Sunday, Timmy Smith had the most amazing Super Bowl performance ever, and without question, the most surprising Super Bowl performance ever. You know, all the talk this week, it is Tom Brady. It is Bill Belichick. It is Matt Ryan. It is Julio Jones. It is Deion Lewis. It is LeGarrette Blount. But I'm telling you right now, we could see a lesser-known player step up with a big play or a big game and surprise everyone. Next week on the show, we will recap the Super Bowl as only we can do. Plus, we will talk NBA, college basketball, and, of course, the Daily Dose Top 5. Hey, if you get a chance, please go to wherever it is that you download the show and just click that little subscribe button. It helps us get seen by a few more people, and you'll be sure not to miss any new episodes when they come out. Feel free to contact us with what's on your mind. You got a suggestion, you got some feedback, hit us up at dailydosesports@gmail.com or find us over on Facebook or Twitter. And be sure to do any shopping that you might need to over at lootcrate.com/dailydose. Be sure to enter Daily Dose into the coupon box. You'll get 10% off your order. Have to say thank you to JSP. Could not do any of this without you. Enjoy Super Bowl 51. I will see you all next week.